Blog Talk Radio.
Like the folks you meet on, like to plant my feet on the Brooklyn Bridge. What a lovely view from heaven looks at you from the Brooklyn Bridge. I love to listen to the wind through her strings, the song that she sings for the town. I love to look up at the clouds in her hair. She's learned to wear like a crown. If you've been a rover, journey's end lies over the Brooklyn Bridge. Don't let no one tell you, I've been trying to sell you the Brooklyn Bridge. All the folks in Manhattan are sad, 'cause they look at her and wish they had the good old Brooklyn. Lies over the Brooklyn Bridge.
This is Kyle from York, the real estate attorney, Robert Hammond.
Don't let no one tell you that I've been trying to sell you the Brooklyn Bridge. You'll miss her most when you roam, 'cause you'll think of her and think of home. The good old Brooklyn Bridge. Like the folks you meet on, like to plant my feet on the Brooklyn Bridge. What a lovely view from heaven looks at you from the Brooklyn Bridge. I love to listen to the wind through her strings, the song that she sings for the town. I love to look up at the clouds in her hair. She's learned to wear like a crown. If you've been a rover, journey's end lies over the Brooklyn Bridge. Don't let no one tell you, I've been trying to sell you the Brooklyn Bridge. All the folks in Manhattan are sad, 'cause they look at her and wish they had the good old Brooklyn. You've been a rover, journey's end lies over the Brooklyn Bridge. Don't let no one tell you that I've been trying to sell you the Brooklyn Bridge. You'll miss her most when you roam, 'cause you'll think of her and think of home, the good old. the folks you meet on like to plant my feet on the Brooklyn Bridge. What a lovely view from heaven looks at you from the Brooklyn Bridge. I love to listen to the wind through her strings, the song that she sings for the town. I love to look up at the clouds in her hair. She's learned to wear like a crown. If you've been a rover, journey's end lies over the Brooklyn Bridge. Don't let no one tell you I've been trying to sell you.
Welcome, everyone, to Howe's New York. I'm your host again, Robert Howe, and we're talking about a multitude of topics, including real estate, community, politics, and any hot topics of the day. We are broadcasting from an undisclosed location in Brooklyn, New York, to a potential audience stretching from Longyearbyen, Norway, to Ushuaia, Tierra del Fuego, thanks to the power of Blog Talk Radio. I'm here with my executive producer, Jason Versace, of Rising Tide Marketing. This is our monthly Brooklyn recap, where we bring you stories of how hot, vibrant, important, world-renowned Brooklyn real estate was, is, and will be more so in the future. So we search high and low to find topics that are of interest to you, and strangely, we only find topics how things are going great, how prices, communities are all on the rise, and Brooklyn is becoming stronger by the day. Did I tell you, Jason, I went to a Broadway play last week, and Broadway play was If Then with Idina Menzel.
Frozen.
She didn't say
my
Frozen.
Daughters love her a lot.
Yes, I guess everybody in the audience wanted her to break out a song of Frozen, but she didn't. But nonetheless, throughout the play, a multitude of references to Brooklyn as a hot neighborhood, and the audience, probably people from all over the country, applauded at and understood all those references. And here we are on September 5th or so, giving our monthly update, once again telling our listeners how hot and vibrant and on the upswing Brooklyn is. So what were you able to find for us in the month of August?
Literally hot. The month of August ended, I think, with our hottest day of the summer, and probably the hottest past week. When you mentioned earlier about our recap shows have taken on this almost like this love fest with Brooklyn because everything's coming up roses, we could maybe title this episode the challenges episode, because while things are still going strong, we start to see like that in any circumstance where there is such prosperity, inevitably challenges will rear their ugly heads. And this first story comes to us from Technically Brooklyn, which is technical.ly on the website. It talks about something that kind of gives the almost like the counterpoint to some of our recent episodes where we touted just how much of a thriving destination Brooklyn has become for technology companies. And a lot of startup companies, we're almost seeing Brooklyn turn into the new Silicon Valley, and I think maybe even Silicon Alley. This story deals with the trials and tribulations some of these companies are finding with finding space in Brooklyn. And the challenges seem to stem mostly from infrastructure issues in terms of, the space not being big enough or the right or laid out correctly, or just the rigmarole of the red tape that you have to go through. I think the length of time that some of these companies are finding just to get into a building has become very, very problematic. And one of the business owners even quoted that it was easier to start his company than it is to get the deal done for the office space in Brooklyn.
Well, you know, I did see the article. It is a little unfair, though, to say that we're out of step with tech needs. I mean, after all, you know, people are migrating to New York Gular, and there are a lot of tech jobs started over in, where would you say, Manhattan and the Canal Street, Houston Street area, and it migrated over to Brooklyn. And honestly, you know, when you come to New York City, it's a city. It's not Silicon Valley where you have acres and acres of land and you put up a brand new, you know, ecologically friendly green building and just let everything fly. So, yes, there are challenges.
It is misleading. It's a misleading way they pose this issue, and that you know, I mean, I think you have to really, when you're coming into the space, you have to be a little bit prepared for the lack of space issues and kind of temper your expectations, because it is like 3 pounds of salami in a 2 pound bag.
Yes, but the upside of this is you are in one of the hottest urban areas in the world, and you can walk out and do all sorts of funky hip stuff, from coffee shops to bowling alleys to rooftop venues to waterfront stuff to park stuff. And yeah, you know, I don't think the article gives enough credence to the fact that, you know, Brooklyn is, you know, several hundred years old and their infrastructure is that way. But, you know, despite that, people are drawn here. You saw an article yesterday, a Brooklyn company, Vice Media, was just given $250 million by investors to expand. Now, this is a Brooklyn firm that some sort of, you know, investment group has looked at and thought they're ready to expand. And, you know, $250 million into one business is a big chunk of money that we've only heard about, you know, Silicon Valley businesses getting, and now a Brooklyn-based business is getting that. So I think despite, you know, the article saying that it's out of step, people still want to be here. People want to live in old buildings.
Mm-hmm.
People don't necessarily want to live in a stainless steel and glass building. They want old, and maybe the article could say, you know, Brooklyn real estate is out of touch with, you know, housing stock in Phoenix, Arizona, where you buy a beautiful ranch-style home on an acre with a pool and two or three-car garage, and here you buy a brownstone for 10 times that amount, and there's no parking, and you have old plumbing, old electric, but you do make the point that, you know, these places don't want to pigeonhole themselves into little cubbyholes that, you know, the prior office building may have constructed. You know, they really tend to like big spaces, big open spaces. And, you know, Brooklyn has a lot of small closed places, but somehow they make do. But, and, you know, the warehouses, you know, some of them have shrunk, been taken off the market because they've been turned into residential, you know, areas. So, you know, some of the warehouses that were begging for tenants, you know, 10 years ago now have either been turned into some sort of a tech place or have been swallowed up in, you know, into a residential setting. But it is an interesting article, and I do always point out, I think often too many times, how when I'm driving down Fourth Avenue, I should take north on Fourth Avenue, slope, there are people biking like crazy down to the Gowanus area where there's some high tech going on, and the Army terminals in throughout Brooklyn, and it hasn't deterred too many people. Whereas you contrast that in Silicon Valley, people are driving their BMWs and their Maseratis and their Priuses up to some shiny, sparkly, glimmering, office building surrounded by acres of parkland.
Well, I think that's probably a little bit of the problem is the article name drops a couple of companies who have left Brooklyn, including Common Bond and Kitchen Surfing. But, as we've mentioned in previous shows, one of the biggest players in that space in terms of startup and tech savvy companies, Etsy, is buying in big and going all in downtown Brooklyn. And I think there maybe is a little bit of a disconnect with the article in blaming Brooklyn, and maybe it's just that they're putting the blame on the wrong people. The part of the blame has got to be the vision that these companies have. They want the old school hipster Brooklyn, but the interior space they want to be like Google's campuses.
Yes.
And I think that also part of the blame is probably on the developers and the owners of the property. They don't want to have to reinvent their property just to accommodate a techie company, especially when they know, hey, I can get another buyer for my building probably a lot easier than you're going to find your ideal utopase. I'll just delve into a couple of points that they mentioned in terms of the specifics, I guess, as to what's driving the tech companies crazy. Four things: 10 to 15 year commitments for leases, the move-in times, the third one is the transit access can be limited. Now, this to me boggles my mind. If you think that this is something that's exclusive to tech companies looking for office space, transit access can be limited. That's probably a problem that every person has to deal with in the tri-state area. And the internet connectivity, which again is probably also not exclusive to our borough, Brooklyn. So I think it is, you're right, I think it's a little unfair, and it doesn't really speak to the fact that so many of these tech companies are still coming here anyway, and maybe it's just some individuals who are a little unprepared for some of the unique challenges that are really the cost of having a Brooklyn address.
Yeah, and you point out, the article does mention the 10 to 15 year commitment. Landlords do like, to know that, they're going to have a rent paying tenant for at least 10 years. And strangely, previous tenants also like that, but I guess
maybe a dot-com tech startup company is probably not the best 10 to 15 year tenant.
Yes, a much shorter lifespan. And move-in times and build-outs, well, yes, unfortunately, the city doesn't cooperate there. This could be a little bit of building department, permits, architects, filings, mm-hmm. etc. And maybe if they have to bring in some extra juice from Con Edison, getting that in from under the street could be a problem. So, yeah, there are those, but that too, as you point out, is not exclusive to tech companies.
Bureaucratic red tape is probably just the cost of doing business, no matter where you are.
Yes.
Well, enough on that article. Let's move on to a piece that's in the New York Times. It's actually pretty interesting, and also kind of continuing an overarching theme about Brooklyn's ongoing transformation. It's not as if Brooklyn was at any point unhip or uncool or untrendy or not a destination that everyone wanted to be in anyway, but it seems that now it's just been magnified exponentially. A New York Times article recently spoke to linking the word luxurious and luxury with Brooklyn now. Brooklyn, I think, used to have this kind of grittier, maybe working class label. But now, as we've seen more and more people flock from it's really the reverse of what it used to be. Coming from Manhattan now to buy in Brooklyn, they want the Manhattan, label to come with it, the amenities, everything. So now Brooklyn and luxury are going to be going hand in hand.
Well, yeah, you do see a lot. So we drove through Williamsburg a couple evenings ago, and the apartment buildings that they put up there were spectacular. They were mind-boggling. Glass, steel, different types of materials that I probably couldn't, define. Doormen and amenities like that I could see at least from street level, amenities like private gardens, private spaces, or what's also popular now is selling rooftop space. There's a place in downtown Brooklyn by the courts that I think it was the old Board of Ed building actually, where they built spaces onto the roof, and people bought them. Residents bought them. And maybe it could be $100,000 for a space on the roof. Imagine that. But you could put artificial grass down. You have a view of all of Brooklyn and maybe Manhattan and the harbor. For $100,000, you could have your maybe a 10 by 20 space on a roof of some building. But the luxury, obviously, with the influx into Brooklyn, developers are needing to one-up each other and offering, theater space with inside their building, pools, gyms, grilling areas, a place to walk your dog so you don't place to wash off your dog, I see, even when you bring back, it used to be an amenity if doorman gave you an umbrella on a rainy day. Now the doorman gives you a bicycle, to go shopping with for a few hours. We'll go around the neighborhood. So the amenities are really just going, through the roof.
If you look at some of the photos from the article, they show, the renderings of what some of these buildings that the developers are working on and are just finished look like, and they seem to be this combination of this ultra high tech looking construction where it's very, very industrial, and it looks almost futuristic, but it retains some of the brownstone Brooklyn and the tree lined streets element to it. So you've got a little bit of a mashup of past and present, and all with an architectural bent on looking very, very efficient with the space. And then some of the amenities that are mentioned in terms of what you're talking about as ways of distinguishing themselves from each other. One building will have some outdoor space like Juliet balconies and private gardens. Another has shared amenities with a roof with checkerboards of dining, lounging, and grilling areas, with some turf lawns, and there's a parking garage, a pet spa, these free bicycles that they're going to have on this fleet of bicycles, a carpool that they're going to have on a motor pool. I imagine we'll see Segways, but it's amazing. And then also what goes along with that is the price you'll pay in rent for a one bedroom will be in the $2,000 range, $2,300 and up for a one bedroom apartment in some of these spaces.
It could be the price of a mortgage payment.
Exactly. Well, since we're getting close, let's move on to our next story, and that deals with one of the neighborhoods. It seems like it doesn't matter what neighborhood you are in Brooklyn. Eventually, the wheel will come around, and you will be the hot neighborhood. And it seems to go around quite a bit. And then the hot neighborhood in August, in the New York Post, is Bedford-Stuyvesant. And this neighborhood has seen median home prices jump up just in the past year, in 2013, over $200,000 for a home, which is kind of mind blowing. And to see the people now that are coming, again, migrating from the city to Brooklyn, and now have targeted Bed-Stuy as their hot destination.
Well, you know, Jason, 100 years ago, Bed-Stuy was a luxury community, and you can see that in the architecture and the inside layout. I mean, these were very ornate properties with sitting rooms and formal dining rooms, and albeit some of the living spaces, the bedrooms and closets, were probably tiny, but overall, back in the late 1800s, early 1900s, these were big houses and wealthy people lived there. And then the story of something declined, and Bed-Stuy became synonymous with dangerous and a place you wouldn't want to walk around. But with
it seems like that still is going on. The police statistics list over 900 major crimes so far in two precincts in Bed-Stuy. So
yeah,
it seems like that's down at the turn.
Well, you know, just buying a $2 million house doesn't mean that the drug den or the, you know, somebody with an illegal gun is going to be pushed out automatically. In fact, it may be more lucrative for that person to stay. You know, the types of people that they can prey on, you know, just went up. You know, their value went up 100%, 200%. But yeah, you know, the inevitable march over the East River into Williamsburg is now marched through. I think it's marched through already. You know, Bed-Stuy. There are probably a small handful of pockets that probably have not changed hands. But I would say if a lot of people have decided to put their property up for sale and grab that $1 million and move somewhere else. But gentrification, a term we really haven't heard. Has it gone out of vogue? I don't know, but it certainly has happened from Williamsburg, Greenpoint, Bed-Stuy, Bushwick, now East. We haven't heard that word. maybe there are so many people who have gentrified that that term has gone out of. There's no one left to really complain about gentrification. Everybody's enjoying, you know, the rapid appreciation of their property values, but that is still going on. Of course, pushing, you know, people out. The property owners are making a killing, leaving, and the tenants, if there are some, pushed around.
Well, it's interesting. Maybe with the way the economy has limped along in its recovery, maybe the power elite are seeing, I need to stretch my buck a little further, and not that Manhattan real estate has gone down. It still outpaces Brooklyn, even though that gap is closed. But a mansion that's going to be listed in Bed-Stuy, according to this article, for $6 million would sell for about $60 million in Manhattan. And according to this, a former Vogue editor chose to sell their $3.5 million Park Avenue penthouse and move to a $1.8 million Bed-Stuy mansion. So maybe they're saying, hey, maybe I don't need to be in the city anymore. I could have some money in the bank or some money to put someplace else and invest and
put back in the trust fund.
Exactly, and still have a quote-unquote mansion. It's kind of nice to have that. You know what, I had to move, but I'm in a mansion. I had to downgrade to a mansion.
Yeah. Boy, you know, if anybody from the 1800s came back and They must be flipping right now. They probably bought the place. The place probably built for about $5,000.
Some livestock.
And they had the horse and buggy. You know, some properties even had you could bring your horse underneath the stoop, horse and buggy underneath the stoop, so you could get out without, you know, getting wet from the elements.
Well, let's close out with a couple of stories. We've got In the Real Deal, which is a New York real estate news site. Of course, with all this activity, we've been touting how uber hot Brooklyn is and the prices and everything is skyrocketing. What comes with that is also the fact that it's further validated by the increase in brokers. The number of agents, real estate agents, is skyrocketing, and Brooklyn is leading the pack. But I guess that is just a byproduct of all this activity that we've been talking about for the past 6 months to a year.
Well, yeah, certainly, you know, this article and the prior articles we talked about, skyrocketing prices, the boom in Brooklyn real estate, and some of the reality shows on TV,
mm-hmm.
where, you know, brokers go around all very well dressed, all in fancy cars, and
it's a dramatic, sexy lifestyle.
sexy lifestyle. I don't think that's all that true. You know, they use the word reality for some reason, but it doesn't mean it is reality. It means
it's the most realistic scripted television you could probably.
Yes, exactly. But it certainly is very attractive. It's probably no different than when people went to Alaska to, you know, to pan for gold, except these people are wearing suits and they have iPhone 6s, and if they come out, that is, today or next week. And they're all driving Beamers and, you know, very, very nice cars and the best suits money can buy. But it is, once again, it's a trendy. If you can make a couple percent on the sale of a $2 million house, apartment, condo, that's a pretty good day's pay.
Well, we'll just rattle off a couple of numbers before we get into our final story. Just in areas where the growth in licensed agents saw the most activity, we had about 6.2% growth in agents in the Bronx, 8% in Manhattan, and then in Brooklyn, over 12% increase in the number of real estate agents who are entering into the workforce in Brooklyn to sell some property. And so, the gold rush analogy is pretty spot on. That this is a real, real test of Frank Sinatra's. If you can make it here, you can make it anywhere. Because while the areas are hot and the property is hot and the demand is high, inevitably, not every broker is gonna find their gold, and some of them may even wind up with fool's gold. But the opportunity is there, and just the numbers here say that people are trying to seize it.
I do get a kick out of this one broker who says to new agents, go to Queens and plant your flag there. But as people are getting priced out of Brooklyn and they're going to move to Queens, Queens will be the next frontier. I don't know if Queens is the next frontier or it kind of stops at a few of the towns just on the Queens-Brooklyn border. I don't think it's
yeah.
going to be flooding all the way out to the Kennedy Airport.
I don't think so either. I think a story will always have its its high value and its because of its close proximity. But again, and this is probably a good indicator, is you don't hear of Queens gaining any of these businesses and the tech companies are fighting to be in Brooklyn and they're complaining that they can't get enough space, that the space isn't good enough, and that it needs. But they're not clamoring to be in Queens. So, I do think that the Queens versus Brooklyn debate is a losing one for Queens.
It's a while off.
Yeah. Let's wrap it up really quick. We'll touch in on our good buddy Mary de Blasio. It's just a story about in the Daily News about what's going on in Brooklyn Bridge Park and what is supposed to be going on, and now that there seems to be a little bit of a brouhaha emerging over what was promised and what's been delivered in terms of the space. And obviously a park was not the only thing in mind for this revitalized area. Housing was definitely a big key component of that, and it looks like now there's a little bit of a snag in the development of the space.
Well, this is curious. Of course, you know, whenever I drive over that area on the BQE, you know, where they have that two-tiered portion along the edge of Brooklyn Heights, I always say to myself, this is the only park too. I don't know how they get there. I think there's one small parking garage in a building, and then that's really the end of it. You got to hoof your way.
You certainly can't drive.
into this park.
Yeah.
And, of course, they have that, the first building that I think they bought from the Jehovah Witnesses. I think they call it number one. I forget what the street name is, but it's number one. And it's that huge building, and you'll see that there's parking actually on the, looks like the second and third floor of the building. That, too, is almost, that's inaccessible by anything but a car or a taxi has to drop you off in front. And in any event, you know, people did buy in there. You know, they were the first pioneers, so to speak. They probably bought for $1 million and now can sell for $2 million. And they're complaining, affordable housing. Oh, no, you know, that's going to, you know, we're going to have these people near us, and we're going to have, it's going to ruin our view. And God forbid, it might even, you know, tear down the value of our properties. Now, these people knew that this was a mixed development that was going on there, and that, I guess, to get it off the ground, they built all the luxury places first, knew they would sell and have enough money to continue their development, made a beautiful park and piers, and it's an incredible space if you know how to get there. And, you know, it was inevitable that, you know, the other half of the plan was to have, you know, middle-income and some low-income people also share that space with you, but... You know, everybody sort of forgot that second half of the plan.
Yep, and if anyone wants to go check out the article on Daily News, Towers Grow in Brooklyn, there's a pretty stunning image of what might be someday of these described as gleaming glass towers in Brooklyn Bridge Park waterfront, and they are pretty spectacular, and I guess while neither one of us will know how to get to the park, if we drive... Or right past the promenade on the BQE, at least we can see these gleaming glass towers someday, maybe.
Yeah, you know, I did see, although I was on the BQE recently, I did see they did build something around Dumbo, it seemed, closer to the water. And I remarked to somebody, wow, this building is now blocking the view that, you know, the building, could it be Front Street maybe? On one side of Front Street had. Now all of a sudden, who would have thought that another high-rise condo would go up in front of it? But, you know, one day you're looking out on the water, and the next day you're looking into somebody else's living room. But, yes, there is a little tug. You know, Mayor de Blasio wants affordable housing, and he has a plan to have several hundred thousand, you know, units built during his tenure. But the wealthy people are saying, not in my backyard or not in my park,
exactly.
Not in my Brooklyn Bridge Park.
The challenges episode. And with that, we'll wrap it up. We've had a real nice, healthy dose of diversity in stories. And just to show you, that, like, once again, not a month goes by where we can't find just a lot of great stories and topics to look back on and in Brooklyn, because Brooklyn is definitely where it seems anyway all the action is.
And so, having recapped all of these stories, I guess it's time to say that this concludes our radio program where we recap Brooklyn real estate during the month of August 2014. And we thank Blog Talk Radio for hosting our show. And thanks to Jason, our producer, for chatting it up and finding these articles about Brooklyn real estate and allowing us to share our limited insights with you all. This is House New York signing off. God bless Brooklyn and all of its people. Wishing you a good night and a good morning and a good afternoon. I am your host, Robert Howe.